The opinions expressed are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the official positions of the sponsors, advertisers, or presenters. Advertising does not imply endorsement by the sponsors and presenters.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Lighting Controls Podcast. We have a fantastic guest for you today, but before we jump into the conversation, let me just take a minute to remind everyone that today's episode is presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And it's financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, or NAILD. Check out our website, lightingcontrolspodcast.com. We have all of the episodes, newsfeed, merch store, trainings, and our council that we're trying to start up on startup and integrations. Check it out. We've got a lot of great information. Also, huge shout out to our sponsor for this episode, MW Connect. You may know them as McWong. If you are unfamiliar with either of those names, though, you should definitely check them out. MWConnect.us is their website. They've been involved in the industry for a really long time. Their award-winning Bluetooth mesh technology really can put you above the others when it comes to lighting control solutions. They do a lot of bespoke design and support. They help out designers out there. They really want to be part of the conversation. So you should definitely check them out, see what they have available, and reach out to your local rep to get them involved in your next project. Worth checking them out. MWConnect.us. But until then, so let's talk with Avi. We have as our guest today. Avi, do you mind just giving us a quick breakdown on who you are and what you do?
Who am I? Don't you know? No. See, I like to get the laughing going right at the beginning, especially when you're talking about lighting controls, because sometimes it can be loud.
What? Lighting controls is the most amazing, humorous adventure anybody will ever go on.
Very much so. And when you don't have a lighting designer who knows how to specify it. But I digress. So I'm founder and CEO of More Lights. We're a Chicago-based lighting design firm. We do not sell product. We are strictly design. I always talk about it and, you know, like to remind people that there is nobody in the field of lighting that does not sell the product other than lighting designers. I think that's a very important point, both on lighting controls and lighting products. And our firm specializes in places where our clients actually, places that our clients actually use, restaurants, travel locations, transportation, hospitality, those kinds of spaces, museum work. We do a lot there. And controls has always kind of been a thing that I have specialized in. Not nearly as much as my associate. I think you guys interviewed Casey Deers a couple months back. Yep. But, you know, from early days of working in the theaters and, you know, learning about DMX and lighting controls and dimmers and how all that stuff goes together. Great story to share there at some point. But now with, you know, Dolly controls, it's just a passion of mine. And I'm excited to be here with you guys today.
Well, thank you for joining us.
So I do have a fun story I always like to share with people with lighting controls is I remember early in my life being asked to go to a architectural lighting control manufacturer's trip, right? You go and they tell you all about their stuff and how amazing it is. And I had been brought up in the theater world where we use SCRs. Because SCRs turn the source on really fast. You can dim really fast and you don't need a relay in front of the SCRs. So I remember going to this event and I'm probably giving this all away, but I'm going to work very hard not to use any manufacturers' names in this conversation. I was at this trip. I can't even tell you where it was because if I tell you that, you'll know where it is too. But I asked the question, so what kind of chips do you use to dim these light sources? Again, this is, I'm showing my age here, but you know, this is when we were still using incandescents and fluorescents and things like that. And they're like, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, I grew up in the theatrical world and we use SCRs and we use these big chokes and all this stuff. and you're showing this tiny little dimmer with no choke, what's going on? And they're like, oh, well, we use Triax. It's like, well, really? Like, don't you want to explain that and talk through that as you're talking about your products? I said, no, that's not important. And it was at that point where I started to realize that there are a few manufacturers in this control space that those people who know me will have heard me say this before, is that there are some control system manufacturers in our world that are purposefully de-educating the specification community to rely on them. And that's really unfortunate. Excuse me. It's really unfortunate because that's a little tiny thing, right? SCRs versus Triax. But it's a really big issue because this manufacturer said they could use their dimmers in theaters. Well, no, they weren't fully load rated. You could not put a full 20 amps on them. And they had to software modify to turn off a relay on top of the paired Triax. So it is not a system you should ever use to turn on a theatrical light fixture.
Just to pause you for a second. You know, I just want, for those who aren't privy to theatrical standards and applications, you know, why is that the case?
Oh, yeah, very good question. The lights have to turn off like this.
You need a snap off.
0.000001 seconds on 20 amp load. It has to go off that fast. Now, the problem is with an incandescent, right? You're going to get the filter, right? Man, it's been so long, but you know, you're going
to
get that.
It's going to have a bit of a dim curve. Yeah. Yep. Even if you were to cut power over, you know, the smallest amount of time, you're still going to have some cool down period for that filament to cool down and stop emitting illumination. Right. Whereas LEDs tend to be much quicker because of the way that they generate that illumination is a much more direct connection to the power. And so, so having the ability to snap things off, even with the understanding that with a filament curve, you're going to have that slow fade, you know, you still need instantaneous response.
Yeah. And that kind of leads to two different directions. You know, one is this idea of how we design lighting controls in our practice. And it leads to, the first question we ask of just about every project: how fast do the lights have to turn off? Can you wait a tenth of a second, or do you need a true zero count off? You know, and that leads us to Dolly or DMX. There is nothing else in our practice. So that's one place to veer off if you guys want to. The other place is the challenge with theaters and restaurants and museums is that things change. Upgrading a control system is not something that they're willing to rip out. They want firmware updates. And I think that's an important point that needs to be discussed too. Recently attended a sales pitch by a manufacturer talking about lighting control sustainability and how you should specify lighting control systems that have upgrade paths. And I found the conversation quite laughable because this manufacturer's idea of upgrades is rip everything out and buy something new from us. And they don't make upgrade paths on their systems because why should they? Everyone's just going to call them anyway. So, you know, where do you guys want to go?
I love the fact that we have this option, and you know, I'd be curious to hear what our listeners wanted to hear that we didn't choose. But maybe we can hit both of them. But you know, I
To
think
create your own
they're
adventure
both,
book.
yeah, right.
Right.
They're
Yeah.
both great
Fast forward
points.
to
I mean,
time stamp X, right?
right. I think, you know, we spent a good amount of time talking about DALL-E and DMX, and I think, you know, there definitely should be a point at which we do a comparative episode where we get a lot of people in to talk about the choice paths when it comes to DMX versus DALL-E, because I think they both bring a lot of great solutions to the table. But I don't think that this is really the best place to do it yet. I think we should have it be a panel discussion. But I do like the idea of talking about, you know, essentially future-proofing. I use air quotes for that because that is really what the challenge is. And that does kind of dovetail with conversations we've recently had about interoperability, because that is sort of the issue. It's not that, you know, you have to gut the project and start over because of the fact that, you know, they're just incompatible. It's also there's infrastructure there, but interoperability when you're dealing with an existing lighting control solution could be the way to fix it so that you're not having to gut the whole thing. And, you know, this can go from just dry contact closures, which we talked about in the previous episode, all the way through UDP commands and integration. So, but from your perspective, Avi, you know, what do you think the real crux of the matter is? What if you had a magic wand that you could wave and change something about our industry to make it so that we didn't need to overhaul the system every single time we did a change like that? What would you do?
Thank you for that softball, man. I'm ready. So what survived? VHS or the Betamax? What survived? Man, I said I was going to use this, but I think this is fair for this
Go for it.
control discussion. What survived? Ecosystem
Yep.
or DALL-E?
And
What survived? HD DVD or Blu-ray DVD? And you talked about your sponsor. We're lighting designers, so we don't dive into the detail of the sponsor here today, but Bluetooth isn't Bluetooth.
Right.
There isn't connection between all these Bluetooth things. So I think that, well, let me tell you what our approach is, that there's two layers to the lighting control system that have to work together. They are not parts, but they are two separate elements that need to work together. The first is a lighting control the lighting fixture control. SERs, TRIACs, 0 to 10, don't use it, but if you're going to, UDP commands, I think that's insane, but fine. And
Wait, why is it insane?
UDP commands to a light fixture? What about the
Well,
power?
okay.
Oh, to a
Maybe
light
not
fixture,
to the
yeah.
fixture
Right.
directly.
We're
Sure.
at
Okay,
the
I'll give
light
you that.
First, let me stop here because we're using a term that we should probably define. So because I'm pretty certain that some of our listeners don't know what UDP commands are. Do you mind? Do you want to take a stab at it, Avi?
No, I do not know. I could not define it really well. I just know it's a layer of IP and its commands. And Casey could tell you exactly what it is. I am not to know all that fancy jargon. Although my programmers tell me that is a great way to connect systems to each other.
Yes.
But I'm not aware of a light fixture I would buy from a brand that would take a UDP command. So, but
No,
please
no. No, no, no,
explain
no,
what
no.
a
I'll give you
UDP.
that. I was very focused on between systems, but when you said it, I just yes, wait, directly at the lighting fixture? No,
But
between systems, yes.
anyways, Ron, do you want to add anything to what Avi defined as a UDP command?
To what he defined. I mean, I guess at its basic for most of our users, right, it is a UDP command, is an Ethernet-based or a LAN-based command between systems, right? And UDP can be a command string, and in a lot of instances, it can be a custom string. I can say preset one, go, you know, I can do, we can do variables. So it could be something with a 3-digit variable. So I'm looking for 3D with parentheses, and I'm looking at 3 digits, and those digits are going to be the timeline and the space, or the space, the timeline, and what I want it to do. So by using variables, we can send essentially one command and trigger everything without writing 100 or 200 or 1,000 custom unique commands for every single space. So it gives you a lot of flexibility, but it requires network connection between systems, which can be problematic depending on security and spaces. And that's a whole separate thing, which is why we end up with RS-232 all the time.
Yes. So our approach is, there's that core thing, and let's simplify it, guys. What you're going to send to the driver, because we're using LEDs across the board, other than power, right? We're going to send power, and then we need some kind of control signal. Again, if it's Tri-X or SCRs, that's going to be on the power signal. It's 0 to 10, Dolly, DMX, it's something else. So my feeling, oh, sorry. So there's that part of the control system, and then there is the keypads, aux sensors, logic, building integration, everything else. My feeling is that the fixture shop side should be a open protocol, whether that is a protocol that needs review like Dolly 2, or an open protocol like DMX, which 90% of the people actually do DMX the way it's supposed to be done. Let's just say it again. The shield is a shield, not ground. That works out. That is an open system. And what you're going to end up with in that situation, and we actually had a school call us recently, it makes the troffers, the downlights, the whatever it is, serviceable and maintainable and tied into a lighting control system, agnostic of that lighting control system, because that's its own thing. So when the fixture breaks, when the light goes out, right? LEDs have 5-year warranties. That's how long we think it's going to last. They last longer, but you know, anyway, that's the other podcast. So my belief is that's the core. You have to have an open, 100% open protocol to control the light fixture, the means of on off dimming for the light fixture. On the other side, that's where you get to proprietary nature. I don't believe personally there's a way of getting around that. I understand Dolly has idea for aux sensors and keypads outside of the United States. None of that's really come in yet and been appropriately listed. But you have the big name manufacturers and some littler name manufacturers that can control those open protocols and then provide their spin, software, cool looking keypads, integration to other systems and everything. And I think with the right design and installation, if you do need to renovate those systems, then hopefully you ran conduit and you can pull the low voltage wire out and put a new one in if you're changing from manufacturer C to manufacturer L, right? Or manufacturer D, like whichever one you're moving to. And it compartmentalizes our world, because we don't want an all Betamax. I mean, how did that work in the last few years for some of those people that used those proprietary systems? You know, let's even just talk, let's not even go manufacturer specific. Let's talk about 3-wire dimming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 3-wire dimming didn't help us get to Dolly or 0 to 10 for that matter.
And again, just to clarify, you know, you're referring to something specific that Ron and I understand what you're talking about, but do you mind explaining what three-wire dimming is?
Yeah, so three-wire dimming was a fluorescent dimming protocol that was, I could be wrong, you guys could probably correct me. I believe it was a Lutron standard that was open. Advance made the drivers, Philips made the drivers. There were a lot of manufacturers that made the drivers. It was a three-wire dimming system that was a hot, a dimmed hot, and a neutral. So the ballast was always powered, and then you had the carrier wire ultimately that provided the voltage. You actually had a dimmer on that other wire. Reduction of voltage reduced the light output on the ballast, and then ultimately to the fluorescent fixtures.
Right,
and it was the best way to dim in those scenarios, and you could get down to 1% dimming on fluorescent ballasts.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you know, it is still applied every now and then to LEDs. It hasn't disappeared completely from our world, but. Yeah, I mean, the idea there is that you have this phantom power powering the driver so that you're not ending up with weird fluctuations as the intelligence to the driver loses power while you're, because you're dimming the power straight to the brain, essentially, which is what you do with two-wire dimming, which is where the term three-wire came from, because two-wire is phase dim, triac, ELV, all those fun phase dim words.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of how we've approached it. And I think in that scenario, you get all the interoperability options you want. And the really cool thing about it is that now the lighting control system is about price and about feature sets, which is completely aligned with, do I want to buy a Mac, or do I want to buy a Dell, or do I want to buy an HP, or do I want to buy a blah, 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 right? And we're moving away from the ability of how am I actually going to dim the light fixture? Well, that's easy. Use an open protocol. And then it's just a matter of which manufacturer system you like using. The client likes, gives you the best service, so on and so forth.
One other thing I would add is
on that control system, we talk a lot about it being exactly the same as conveyance systems and fire alarms, right? You don't see people removing the Otis elevators from buildings. No, once you have an Otis elevator, you are continually paying Otis to maintain said elevator. A lighting control system is the same thing. You're not ripping it out. You're just not. And especially nowadays, right? Like back in the day, bad dimmer panels, that stuff happens. But I mean, gentlemen, we have CD80 panels still working at the Museum of Science and Industry. And they are amazing, and we are never pulling them out. They're too expensive to remove. You know, like, so that's how I see it.
Yep. Okay. So one segue on the CD80 thing. I agree with you. CD80 supervisors, you know, ETC sensor racks, I don't care how old it is, they can be upgraded, they can be repaired. For now, anyway, right? Both of those systems are very easy to repair, maintain, and get parts for. And as long as that continues, at the end of the day, it is essentially just an electrical panel. Yes, it's a big dot box, and we have dimmers in it or relays or whatever, but it's a giant electrical panel.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I'm with you. If they work and you can maintain them, there's no reason to rip them out. Where was I going to go with my second part of that before I got distracted? Oh, back to the proprietary thing with control systems. So I guess the question, though, is there's two parts to this, right? Is, you know, if manufacturer folds, they go under, they come out with a new design, you do have to rip out the system and start over. I think one thing I would like to see at some point is everything's moving to Cat 5. So maybe we finally get all these systems to Cat 5 so that we don't have these wire type issues where you do have to completely rip out wire and pull new wire in. Even if it's in pipe, that can be a large undertaking depending on the size of the building. So that's one thing I'd like to see addressed. But then also, where does the line in the sand stop? Right. So like if we talk about the fixtures being Dolly or DMX, that's great from the fixture side. But then, you know, if the control system, the keypads, is it now all the sensors? Is it what's the integration points? Like, where is that line in the sand with where we can get away from being completely proprietary and have more interoperability so you can use a different sensor from somebody or a different switch? Or where is that?
So to your first point, I think that it'd be great if it was all Cat cable. But I think that you have manufacturers sending a lot more voltage to mm-hmm. keypads and aux sensors than what those tiny little cables can support. I know we're doing this PoE thing, and we can chat about that a little bit too, if you want, proprietary. You know, I'm less of a proponent of having Cat 5 from keypads to aux sensors to everything. I want those systems to work. And I think that to get to your second point is, you know, every control system is going to have an interface that goes from that open protocol to their language. In my opinion, that's the bridge. I'm not asking for a company agnostic device that sends those Dolly commands and receives, and sends the DMX and receives DMX commands. I'm looking for the control system manufacturer to make that device their way, their thinking. You know, and in the Dolly world right now, we have manufacturers that are doing single loop devices, manufacturers doing dual loop devices, and manufacturers doing three loop devices. Well, you know, we all know a three loop device in a 100 loop project is going to be more cost effective than the one. It just is. I mean, the amount of power and everything that has to be connected.
Can I stop you again? I want to make sure that people who aren't familiar with Dolly understand what you're saying. But yeah, so what is a Dolly loop?
So a Dolly loop is, according to the Dolly specification, no more than 64 devices or 16 groups, according to the Dolly protocol.
Sure. So those all share the same wire interconnection, daisy chain.
Daisy chain, T-tap, star, do whatever you want. Right. Any contractor listening to this, make them two different colors, please, because it is still a digital system. We had a project.
Have you had to trace the same color wire before?
Yep.
Oh,
yeah. Actually, my mom's fitness facility is Dolly. Again, Dolly for another conversation. But sure. Yeah, they ran all orange wire. At More Lights, we call it 55 devices and 14 zones, because that 64 and 16 is a hard cap. You cannot go above those numbers ever. It will not work.
Back to your talk about single loop, double loop, triple loop.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you would want to have a triple loop if you have 100 loops on your project instead of a single loop.
Yeah, it's just more stuff to install, more stuff to fail, more stuff to program, more stuff. I like the ability to go to a client and have a conversation of, look, here's control system manufacturer A, B, C. These are their keypads. Which one do you like? They all happen to be about the same cost, right? isn't that the conversation we should be having? Like, look and feel of the thing that the user's going to use versus I can do this and I can do that. I mean, it never comes down to that. It just comes down to price. Touchscreens, right? We love touchscreens. We love iPad interfaces. Every single manufacturer has a different software. I think let that be. Let the keypad, aux sensor, interface between everything, right? The multiple open protocol devices interconnect. So in that situation where you have 100 loops of Dolly, you're going to have multiple devices from the manufacturer to speak to all of those. However that manufacturer decides to talk from device to device, let that be proprietary. It's the same way for Siemens for their mechanical systems. It's the same way for Johnson Controls. It's the same way for fire alarm systems. It's the same way for Otis and I don't know a lot of other conveyance systems because I don't specify them. But between the three elevators, they're going to have a proprietary language between them.
Right.
That's fine. Sounds great. But you know what Otis and those people don't make you do? Buy the cabin interiors from them. You can. Mm. You can buy their cabin interiors. But
and so in the lighting control discussion, what would the equivalent of the cabin interiors be?
The light fixtures. I mean, the decor, right? The control system, the elevator, gets you from point A to point B. The interior is what you actually experience. The light in the space is what you actually experience. So that's how I kind of think about it. It would be great if it was all Cat 5, but I think that's going to be a hard sell.
And I think, you know, you bring up a really interesting point, and that is basically where we're at in a lot of cases in the United States and Canada. And when it comes to these projects is the fact that we do have this division, and these are, I like to define them as dimming protocol and system protocol. And so the dimming protocol is how you're actively controlling the luminaire. Really doesn't matter, you know, 0 to 10, ELV, Dolly, et cetera. Those tend to be open standards for the most part. And then the system protocol could actually be like three system protocols. You might have one protocol from the keypads to the central controller. You might have another protocol running out from an interface to another interface. So as far as that goes, I mean, that is where we're at right now in this environment. And I think the reason why there's pushback on that primarily is actually at the keypad level. I would say that, you know, that also I would make the argument is an elevator cab element too, because the experience that the end users have is with the keypad or whatever the user interface is going to be, whether it's touch screen or a computer interface. So, you know, having that also be a little bit open to other people to get their options involved, you know, because there are manufacturers out there that lean very heavily on the high quality keypad to sell their product. And whether or not their lighting control system is actually the best application for the project becomes a moot point because the end user wants that specific keypad.
Well, and we did a high-end residence here in Chicago that wanted very, very fancy keypads. I don't want to use the brand name, but you know, looks like the 1900s, you know, the push button stuff. Yeah. Very cool. And we have a fully digital lighting control system. Again, it's the only way we specify things. Excuse me. So, you know, we figured out how to interface it and it works. And it's amazing. One of my staff members were at the house recently and the wife was showing them, yep, there you go. That's the preset you wanted. This is how it's set up. Like, to some people, it would sound kind of crazy that you don't have breakfast, lunch, dinner, blah, you know, whatever it is. You pushed twice or three times to get to dinner, but they wanted that look. And that's fine. Right. And you can do that with any system, right? Contact closures are your friend.
Right.
It just adds complexity and, yes. and you can do that. But I think that while I agree with you that it'd be nice to have a universal keypads, we do. It's called momentary toggle switches. And you can interface that with any lighting control system, right? Or even just a switch. An on-off, like, 120-volt switch is ultimately a contact closure. So this position, do this, and this position, do that. Mm-hmm. That's what you want to give people. Great. You're still going to have a huge lighting control system in the background with digital dimming and all this other stuff because they have to meet energy code. But you want a switch on the wall. Yeah, no problem, man. Here you go.
So I feel a number of people talking in my ear right now in response to your comment, though, of like, you know, well, technically you can do it so long as you have the infrastructure to make it happen. And there are a lot of people who push back on custom integration like that, where you have to really finesse it. It's not an out of the box, you know, manufacturer provided tech installation solution. You have to have somebody who's going to put in that the work to make that a bespoke application. And so curious what your response is to that.
Well, you need a lighting designer always. There is no project that doesn't need a lighting designer, in my opinion. I don't care if it's a warehouse, a street, or a restaurant, a hotel room. You need lighting designers. You need lighting designers involved that understand lighting and understand lighting controls. That's number one. Number two, this idea that the lighting control manufacturers can be the integrators is a falsehood. I think that we are successful on our projects when we have integrators. Now, obviously, in the museum world, that's very common. When we get into, you know, million square foot transportation facilities, you know, we write an integrator spec. And what we're finding, at least in the Chicago market, is that our rep agencies hire the right people to act as integrators when they're selling these systems, other than probably the big, huge lighting control company. But, you know, we have typically released a integrator requirement on our projects. I mean, gentlemen, white tuning requires integration. And there's two reasons for that. One is it's white tuning. The way we do it, Dolly Type 8, makes it substantially easier than anything anybody else is trying to do, which is quite honestly silly. You know, if you're dealing with DMX, like, that requires an integrator because DMX is what it is, as people have seen from other podcasts that you guys have done. But the other side of it is, and this is probably worth a whole separate conversation, but the finger pointing that happens between the fixture manufacturer and the controls. And I can sit here and tell you today that 80% of our punch list items when it comes to the end of a project is the fact that the fixture manufacturer programmed the driver wrong. Wrong dimming curve, wrong milliamp outputs, whatever it is. And the only thing you find that is once the lighting control system's commissioned. And if you're relying on a lighting control manufacturer to then close the loop on that with an electrician who bought everything, I wish everyone a lot of luck. It doesn't happen. Especially if you're a specifier in a different city, i.e. different rep agency bounds, it makes it even more complicated. So an integrator is really important. And so if we get back to the idea of the momentary toggle switch and such, that's where you meet, you know, us as the specifier need to draw those things. And this might scare some people that listen to your podcast, but, you know, actually drawing a drawing that shows a switch and a momentary contact with 12 gauge wire coming off of it going to a contact closure location. Like, that's not a code issue. It's not anything other than explaining to the electrician how this thing has to go together. And that's not something that we should ask a control system manufacturer to do. If there is an integrator, then yeah, that should be part of it and a part of the submittals, but explaining the job up front.
Yeah, and you're not going to get a lot of pushback from either one of us, right, on that. So we don't need to jump on that soapbox anymore. But, you know, as a designer, projects are getting more and more complicated. You have multiple manufacturers involved, whether it's white tuning or color changing, or this is DMX and this is whatever, right? You've got so many different protocols, different manufacturers. It's impossible. Even if you had each manufacturer come out and commission their own system, they're each going to want to provide, right, either their own control system, or the manufacturers for the fixtures aren't going to provide the integration to the other system, right? So as projects get more and more complicated, we need integrators. And so this is my soapbox moment for a minute for the council that Webster and I are working on, right? CLCSI. The Council for Lighting Control Startup and Integrations. And this is exactly part of what we're trying to do, is make it easier for people to find integrators across the country, really define what that role is, right? Because people have used commissioning as startup and this. So really define some of the terminology that we need throughout the industry and make it easier for people. But I think, I guess one question for you, you mentioned that you guys write that into your specification. I think we're at a point, and how do we get there, where there is a unique specification? Because I know some exist. I know somebody on my screen, he's below me at the moment. I don't know where he is in reality, but he's down there, wrote a specification for exactly this purpose. So are we at a point where we need a CSI section for startup integration?
On our jobs, there is.
Well, and I think
where we have
it has it. It has a totally separate CSI. I think we 26501 or 2, right? Like, we create a number, but it's lighting control integrator. So I think we do 500 is the lighting controls, 501 is lighting control narrative, and I believe 502, I could be wrong, and every project's a little bit different, wants different numbers, but we put an integrator. And yeah, I think so. And, we require knowing who that's going to be at submittals. I mean, specs right there. I mean, veering off just a second, but like, we don't put model numbers on our drawings. So like a fixture schedule, there's no manufacturer and no model number on our drawings. It's all in the specification. If I had $1 million for the amount of distributors that called Morelights and asked for a price for the project, I'd be a very, very rich person. My response is always, have you looked at the specifications? And I would give you a little bit, you know, less, 50% say, what's that?
And I think that right there is a highlight of the challenges for specifiers, because, you know, we have two types of documents. We have drawings and we have book specs, and the book specs are the ones that rarely get passed to the appropriate individuals. And as a result, the DIV 26 specs, which is where you're referring to, there's a whole podcast that we could dedicate to talking about CSI specifications and how to allocate stuff. But Division 26 is electrical division, typically means that the integrator is going to be a sub contractor to the electrical contractor. And so as a result, you know, that means that when the electrical contractor is on the project and they're putting together their submittals, they should be utilizing the integrator to help develop those submittal drawings to support the project. But, you know, I think that is its own territory, and the and those specs, those book specs or written specs or project specs, however you want to refer to them, that document is massive and rarely gets distributed to the appropriate individuals. Instead, you just get like an RCP and that's it.
Yep.
And you're expected to do the full takeoff with that, which is where you actually go, I need this, I need this, I need this. And so what you're saying, Avi, is that because you don't have a manufacturer or a model number on your drawings, they have to look at the book specs to get that information. And as a result, they can't do a takeoff without both documents, which I think is a really wise decision if you're trying to force people to look at your book specs. We're almost out of time here, so I want to recap everything that we've talked about here.
Can I add just one point? Is I think it's important to note that the book specs and the drawings are part of the contract.
Yes.
So it is very important that you are executing, any of the distributor friends who are watching this podcast, if you are not looking at that, you are potentially contractually liable. Now, mind you, you're selling a bill of materials, so that could go one way or the other. Yeah,
there's a lot of legal discussion about where liability falls. But as far as things go, yes. I mean, if your project issues for a bid, drawings and book specs, both of those are part of the contract and must be adhered to. With the caveat knowing that a lot of people don't edit their book specs. They just copy and paste from one project to the next.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why people just assume, that's meaningless information.
Totally.
So
we're just as potentially liable for that. It happens. but there's the narrative and you know, the narrative is the only place there, and the light fixture spec, right? The written stuff is the written stuff, and but the spec and the other things are important, and you know, spares and things like that. So, sorry, I didn't want to add too much, but I thought it was an important point that should always be said, because I don't think it's said enough in our world that they are part of the contract documents.
Also, not legal advice. Seek a lawyer.
Yes, no legal advice. I take no legal responsibility. And roll the catch line again that these are our opinions and only use it with a grain of salt.
So I mean, we've meandered all over the place in this conversation, which I love. I think there's so much to talk about, and we'll definitely have you back on here to have that conversation about Dolly and DMX. And maybe even to addendum this conversation. We've already got an addendum episode coming up on the horizon for an episode where we didn't misspeak, but just kind of said things in a way that people might infer incorrect information. So we definitely want to make sure to keep that momentum up and people informed rather than misinformed. But, you know, as far as things go, you know, when it comes to lighting and lighting design and lighting controls design, you know, it really does require hands-on effort and knowledge, a lot of experience and knowledge to be able to support that. And so what you're doing in the world of lighting design and lighting controls design is really trying to shift that so that the right people are on the project, the right decisions are being made with what resources you have available to you. I mean, the reality of the situation is we do not live in a perfect world. We're never going to live in a perfect world. And so how do we take what is imperfect and provide people with a solution that works for them? And, you know, as far as when we're looking at a lighting control system and thinking through all of the parameters, we still do need to go, okay, what manufacturer has what capabilities that I'm looking for, which is not, in your opinion, a bad thing. And I wouldn't necessarily push back on that either. I mean, there are definitely arguments to be made for and against that mentality. But as things are, you know, we've got an array of options for us that are tools that are useful to each project in their own way. And so to just say, well, I'm never going to use that manufacturer, or I'm always going to use this manufacturer, is limited. But additionally, you know, that's the benefit of having an open protocol for controlling luminaires. You know, having a 0 to 10 phase dim, Dolly, DMX, whatever you want, so long as it's open and available to anybody that wants to provide a fixture for the project, that's kind of where the line is drawn between a lighting control system and a lighting fixture. And that's probably where it should stay. I mean, there's definitely arguments to be made for proprietary systems embedded in luminaires, and I'm not going to push back on that because they have their place. But the majority of lighting control solutions out there do embrace open dimming standards for their fixtures. And that really is a great asset to you as a designer because of that flexibility of, I don't need to use just this person's product.
Well, and for maintenance, you know,
and for maintenance, like, yes.
You start to put those proprietary systems in, and what happens in 10 years when somebody just can't get the chips anymore?
Right.
Then you're going to rip out the drywall.
Yeah. Well, and additionally, you know, when it comes to systems in a building, you rarely are going to be pulling them out. You know, like you said, with elevators, you know, you're not going to pull a whole elevator shaft out and a whole control module out and replace it with somebody else's elevator equipment. You're going to maintain what you purchased. But I think that's another thing that we are a little short-sighted on, is we have this perspective of one and done with lighting controls, where it's like, I don't need to think about this, pay for anything, it's done. And it's like, no, this is a living, breathing thing that you need to take care of, and you can't just let it sit forever and expect it to function just the same. And additionally, I think there is a lot of work being done to recreate that model of dimming panels so that you can upgrade the system over time if you want to expand upon it. I mean, that's one of the benefits of open digital standards, is that you can continue the resource going forward with more fixtures, more devices. But, you know, that whole thing, we're still kind of developing and we're still trying to figure that out. But I think getting to integrators, that's a great resource to utilize. And that's something we didn't talk about, but bringing in maintenance is ongoing care for the project. You know, if you have an integrator involved, odds are they're going to be prepared to have that conversation and say, if you want us to service this in the future, give us a call. Here's, you know, how you get in touch with us. This is the project information. And so that way, Avi Moore at Moore Lighting doesn't get the phone call 10 years later saying, hey, my lights aren't working.
Actually, we do get the call and we help them maintain it. But, nobody else knows how to do it, which is fine.
Sure.
That's another whole conversation too.
Totally. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, and
no?
I don't think you missed anything. Okay. I guess the only thing I would add, because it's just something that kind of grinds my gears. While 0 to 10 is a standard, there's two of them, and 90% of the people don't standardize to the standard. So it's not an open standard for the uninformed and light-minded folks. It is a very complex protocol that requires a lot of understanding of both sides of the equation. Do not put it in the same brain space as ELV, MLV, DMX, or Dolly. It is much more complicated with a whole bunch of nuances that we don't have time for in this discussion.
I think that's a fair request.
Yeah, 100%. I would say I don't, you know, to Webster's point and to yours, I don't know that there's anything wrong if Avi gets the phone call in 10 years that the lights aren't working, because the integrator who they worked with, right? I mean, I guess, and that's the beauty of having multiple integrators in any city or in any space, is like any manufacturer, you're not necessarily tied to them, right? Like this is a service industry, right? As an integrator, you are providing a service. And if you do not provide a good service to your client, they can go somewhere else. So I don't know that it's a bad thing that Avi does get that call in 10 years, the system's not working, because it's an opportunity to potentially revisit that system with somebody else. So, right, as much as I want to say I'd like that phone call myself in 10 years, it's not a bad thing, right? That these things happen. So, you know, Avi, really, thank you for your time. It's been a fantastic discussion. We did just absolutely go all over the place, but I think it's, you know, it's really important for everyone to understand that these projects are getting more and more complicated, require integration, require an integrator, and in many instances, not just manufacturer-provided services at this point. And we need to start looking past that, looking bigger picture, and also realizing that if you've got three or four manufacturers on a project, they're all carrying a cost for that. If everyone backs that cost out, there's now not this magical hidden fee of the third-party integrator. Right? Light bulb. Yeah. So if we could get to that point, things start becoming easier. So Avi, really, thank you so much for your time. Greatly appreciate everything you did for us today. And like Webster said, we definitely will have to have you back on at some point soon.
Yeah. Thank you guys. This is a lot of fun. I love this. And I hope to have you guys on one of our podcasts coming up soon. Once we totally. Release that.
Absolutely, bud. Absolutely. So thank you. I just want to take a minute to remind everyone today's episode is presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And it's financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, or NAILD. Check out our website, lightingcontrolspodcast.com. We've got everything that you need regarding the podcast and more. And additionally, huge thank you to our sponsor, MW Connect, previously known as McWong. Check them out. mwconnect.us. You know, we did mention Bluetooth mesh in this episode, but they really are a part of this whole solution-based application to lighting controls. They really are focused on listening to the industry and providing solutions that meet the needs that designers are trying to utilize. They've been involved. They just passed 40 years in the industry, so they really know what they're talking about. They've got support channels in the U.S. ready to go, and they love this conversation going forward. They are a huge supporter of this podcast and integration conversations, so really worth checking them out if you're unfamiliar with them, mwconnect.us. But thank you so much for joining us here today. And until next time, we'll see you. And Avi, really awesome conversation. I love this sort of stuff. So thank you.